Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Nick Batram, the head of investor relations and corporate strategy for GVC Holdings, which is making some big moves globally and also in the U.S. now that sports betting is legal. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos, and now sports betting in North America. To learn what iGamingPlayer.com can do for your business, visit iGamingPlayer.com/join. GVC Holdings is a huge online gaming company consisting of such powerful brands as Party Poker, Party Casino, bwin, Ladbrokes, Coral, Sporting Bet, and more. GVC also has a relationship with MGM Resorts in the U.S. to run its New Jersey iGaming operations and now has reached an agreement to operate its online sports betting business across the country. Nick Batram was recently appointed the head of investor relations and corporate strategy for GVC. He has spent more than 30 years in the London finance business and has spent the last 21 analyzing the leisure and gaming sectors. Batram explains how his company is growing and why its recent acquisition of Ladbrokes Coral will transform the company culture. He spoke with me at the GVC offices in London in August. Nick Batram, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Here we are in London at the GVC headquarters, and I'm here just to do a little fact-finding on what the company is all about. So thanks for joining us.
No problem. Pleasure to meet you.
Why don't you start with just giving us a little thumbnail of what GVC is and the place they play in the online industry.
Well, where we are today is we are one of the biggest sports-led online companies mm-hmm. in the world. Got there through largely acquisition but also combination of organic growth.
Okay.
And every business that we've bought, we've accelerated that growth. Mm-hmm. And it is a fascinating history. I mean, if you go back well over 10 years now, you know, it was a business that focused in emerging markets. It was a small business. It didn't have the balance sheet mm-hmm. to be able to go into the bigger markets and compete with the bigger brands. But over time and through that period, as we've got bigger and we've dealt ourselves bigger transactions as well, we've come from a kind of largely unregulated grey market business to a business that today 95% of our revenues are taxed and from markets that are either regulated mm-hmm. now or in the process of regulation. Mm-hmm. And we see ourselves getting more and more regulated.
Sure.
Part of that is because one is the scale that we've got to, and two is the fact that more and more markets are generally becoming regulated.
Mm-hmm, right.
So what we end up with today is, you know, a business just under circa sort of 7 billion sterling market cap, right. Over 3 billion of revenues, predominantly driven from UK sports customers. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about sports customers in certain markets is that they are good multi-product customers.
Sure.
If you look at our online business, roughly half of our revenues actually come from gaming as well as sports, mm-hmm. but they're customers that come in via sports, which is could be quite an interesting concept
sure,
right. development as far as the US market
right.
owner is concerned. Mm-hmm. It's built entirely on our own technology stack,
mm-hmm.
so technology is important to us. We own everything from the casino to the poker
right.
to the sports book to the back end mm-hmm. and even bingo now.
Right.
And that, we feel, gives us a number of advantages. One is that it's quite an efficient way of doing it once you've put that sunk cost
right.
in. When we are acquiring companies, we can take significant synergies out of those businesses. You've seen that with the bwin deal
right.
we did in 2016.
Right.
We took over 125 million euros of synergies out of that business,
mm-hmm.
and we've identified 130 million of annualized savings from the Ladbrokes Coral deal.
Okay.
So it's, for us, our strategy is about being as big as we possibly can, being as diverse as we can geographically,
mm-hmm.
built on our own technology with very strong brands and what we believe are some of the strongest people in the industry.
Great. Let's talk about a couple of the units then. Well, the bwin Party, I think, was the big one. That really got people's attention. You know, this little company was buying the huge bwin Party group. How did that come about, and what has that meant to the company?
It's meant an awful lot to the company. It's definitely enabled us to, it's propelled us into a brand new audience of investors,
mm-hmm.
And also it's enabled us to do the even the bigger transaction.
Right.
Labyrinth Coral.
Sure.
Bwin Party, ironically, was itself the sort of the child of a failed merger. Mm-hmm. Both companies got together sort of just about 2011.
Right.
Bwin historically was a pioneer in European sportsbook.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong, very dynamic sportsbook, great brand name. Most people know it from the Real Madrid sponsorship days.
Right.
And Party Poker, clearly prior to UEFA in 2006, was the biggest gaming brand, online gaming brand in the world.
Right.
Now, post UEFA 2006, and they pulled out of the US,
sure.
The business shrunk considerably.
Right.
The business was being rebuilt, so it was good in casino, still had some poker, mm-hmm. bought a little bingo business.
Right.
So they did, but they didn't have any sports.
Sure.
Bwin had sports, mm-hmm. but didn't have any gaming.
Right.
So what could possibly go wrong?
Of course.
You put the two together, you had a billion sterling market cap, had a billion sterling market cap, and actually prior to our acquisition, the combined entity was worth three quarters of a billion.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real destroyer of value.
Right.
And some of that was self-inflicted through poor execution.
Mm-hmm.
Joint CEOs doesn't tend to work very well in many companies.
Right. Yep.
They were also unlucky in terms of where the regulatory environment got tougher for them, and they made some very poor operational decisions.
Sure, right. So they were ripe for somebody to come along and pick them up who could see the synergies that they failed to really not operate on.
Absolutely, and I suppose in many ways some surprise was that there were really only two suitors. There was ourselves and Triple Eight.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably goes, it's probably a reflection that if you look at our peer group, you know, with the exception of the Stars Group, a lot of companies are very sort of UK Anglo-Saxon centric,
mm-hmm.
or they're very local to a particular market.
Right.
Something like Bwin was in a lot of different international markets.
Right.
There are regulatory risks in some mm-hmm. of those markets.
Yeah, no questions.
And whenever you see a business going down year after year,
mm-hmm.
you don't know whether you're catching a falling knife.
Right.
Or you've actually got something where you can create some real value.
Right.
Fortunately, it was the latter.
Right, of course, yeah. Right. Well, I think it made sense what happened to Party with them pulling out of the U.S. after UIGO, which I thought was a very smart move, you know, because look what happened to the Stars Group. I mean, eventually they got around to it, but they went through some pain.
When you say that, I mean, if, you know, it was absolutely the right thing to do from a legal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, would the Stars Group have 70% of the global poker market if it had pulled out, like mm-hmm. all the other mainstream operators in 2006?
Sure.
I don't think it would do.
Right, right. But then a lot of the people who are running the company are not involved in it anymore. So, you know, I guess you take the good with the bad at that point.
Yeah, I think for their business and how it's worked out and the cost of it, they're a winner.
Right.
You know, they stayed in until they were forced out, effectively. I think by doing so, they've created that position they've got today. You're mm-hmm. absolutely right. There are different people at the helm. You know, it's a very well-run group today.
Right, now it is, yes.
They've done some, you know, interesting strategic transactions,
mm-hmm.
and there's clearly real momentum corporately in the business.
Right, okay. So what's your share of the sports betting market in the UK right now?
In the UK right now, it would probably be in the region of about 15%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in the rest of Europe?
This is where it gets a bit more challenging as a combined group. So if we looked at Italy, for instance,
mm-hmm.
then again, we're probably not far off that sort of level of 15%.
Okay.
Markets such as Germany would be market leader, but it would be mm-hmm. difficult to say,
right.
because in a lot of these markets, the actual absolute scale of the market is difficult mm-hmm. to get to because you've got black market operators.
Sure, of course, right. Yeah.
So we're paying all our taxes
right.
in countries like Germany.
Right.
Not everybody else will do. We'll know we're the biggest. But essentially, the strategy is to be in all the big regulated markets and be a top three, top four player at the very least in those markets. And that is the strategy. So if we can find opportunities to double up in certain markets, that's very much what we'll look for.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the most recent acquisition, the Ladbrokes Coral. A big acquisition because it included a lot of bricks and mortar facilities as well. How has that worked out so far?
Well, it's very early days.
Right.
You know, we're very pleased with what you've bought.
Mm-hmm.
There is no question that being 100% online gaming business, buying a retail business mm-hmm. in the UK
right.
raised a few eyebrows. I think the reality is that, you know, there was a piece of legislation in the UK, which was the triennial review, which was specifically looking at machines in high street right. betting shops, mm-hmm. and there could have been a number of scenarios.
Right.
But that uncertainty enabled us to acquire what we think are some fantastic brands, mm-hmm. and ultimately a very good business underneath,
sure.
at a time when there was great uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And a realization also from their management that online gaming and gaming in general is becoming more and more global.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things that we could bring, such as our proprietary technology.
Sure, right.
And we have accelerated growth in every business that we've bought. But there's no doubt it raised a few eyebrows.
Sure.
We structured the deal, mm-hmm. in such a way that if it was the worst case scenario,
right.
in retail, £2, then
right.
shareholders would get no more, assuming that act is mm-hmm. that legislation is enacted this year. So we managed to do a transaction which we believe insulated our shareholders mm-hmm. from the worst case scenario.
Right.
But equally, if it wasn't the worst case scenario, a level of Coral shareholders could benefit.
Right.
Why do we buy it? Well, one is because the UK is a market which is the biggest online regulated gaming market
right.
in the world,
mm-hmm.
and we were underweight as far as sportsbook is concerned.
Okay.
And looking at the potential targets that we could have acquired, for us, this had the right blend of what we thought we could do with the business, what we thought we'd have to pay for the business.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I think if you look at a number of markets across the world, for a number of them, it is difficult to enter the market without a land-based presence.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a good example would be the US.
Sure, of course.
You know, right. whereby, you know, you need that land-based presence mm-hmm. in order to get access to the market. You've got the same in places like Belgium. We actually bought a small business in Georgia, the former Soviet
right.
Republic,
yes.
rather than the southern state. And, you know, that has got a betting shop, it's got a mm-hmm. casino, and because you need that
right.
to get online.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of retail doesn't frighten us. And in fact, if you look at a market such as Italy,
mm-hmm.
you know, retail is a very strong proposition in Italy. And a lot of the customers that go online are required for that retail business.
Right.
And with the odd exception, it's been very difficult to grow a pure online business of any scale in Italy. So retail doesn't frighten us, and in many markets, it's actually an advantage to
sure.
have a physical uh-huh. proposition.
Right.
So we like the deal because it got us into a big market, it's a competitive market,
mm-hmm.
but we've got a track record of making businesses work in every single market, in very diverse markets. We think through our technology, we can bring significant savings and enhance mm-hmm. what they've already got. And look, it's very early days,
sure, right,
but
right.
we're very pleased with what we've acquired.
Well, I think the value of the brand of Ladbrokes and Coral, for that matter, is very valuable. I mean, they have such a great legacy in the betting business. So is that a part of the equation for you as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think the real upside mm-hmm. probably comes in that Ladbrokes brand,
right,
which
right.
is the best known brand
mm-hmm.
in the UK gaming market.
Right.
But its performance, really, probably over the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
has been pretty poor.
Right.
It's consistently grown less than the market, and
mm-hmm.
in some years it's gone backwards
right.
For a number of reasons.
Sure.
And
right.
you know, we think we're in a strong position now to sort of address some of those issues, get Ladbrokes back to where it should be. And there's no doubting the capabilities in that Ladbrokes Coral team, because they've done an absolutely fantastic
mm-hmm.
job with Coral,
right.
which you would say probably isn't as strong a brand as,
right.
as Ladbrokes, yet Coral has been growing
right.
faster than the market. So it's a competitive market. We're not walking into this blind
right.
thinking it's going to be easy. It won't be easy, but we're confident that we can do it.
Okay. And the Coral brand is predominantly bingo, correct?
No, that's Gala.
Okay.
So Coral is sports.
Good, I'm glad you
yeah,
straightened
no, that's,
out.
That's fine.
I see the Gala Coral, and
yeah,
I always get confused. Because
it was Gala Coral
right.
Coral Group. So,
right.
And that was one where you had Gala had land-based bingo.
Right.
And
yep.
online, it's sold the land-based.
Okay.
It's purely online.
Okay, great.
But yeah, it's one of the biggest bingo players, online bingo
right.
players in the market.
Okay, great. That clears that up then. So let's talk about the recent MGM deal you announced in the U.S. Obviously, a lot of activity going on in the U.S. MGM had already had some experience with you guys in New Jersey with online gaming. You had partnered there. Give us some details, because I'm still a little unclear on what the details are about this arrangement.
So, we looked, obviously, we were very excited about the repeal of PASPA and what this could potentially mean for the US market.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there are a number of business models and a number of ways that you can look to get into the market. Our preference was to be more than just a technology supplier.
Right.
One of the things with B2B and just being a technology supplier is that you're only as good as your customer in many respects. You can give them all the best technology in the world,
sure,
but if their operational execution isn't where it should be, then it's not going to work. And we felt that we had more to offer than just technology.
Mm-hmm.
We work in lots and lots of different markets, different products, different nuances. You acquire customers in a different way, you keep customers in a different way, and so that knowledge bank of operating in lots and lots of different markets is worth something. And our view was that from day one we wanted to do a deal with a big partner,
right?
A partner that had a multi-state footprint,
mm-hmm,
a partner that was very highly regarded in the industry,
right?
And also had a very strong brand.
Mm.
So we spoke to a number of operators and a number of different parties, and MGM was something that we really wanted to do from day one,
right?
Which is what we've done. Now, yes, we have an existing New Jersey relationship with them in terms of poker and casino,
mm-hmm,
and that's been a valuable learning curve, actually.
Sure.
It was a transaction that was originally put together by BWIN.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably fair to say that it wasn't the easiest of B2B deals,
right,
for a period of time. But through that process, I think both of us have learned a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that business has actually started to perform a lot better over the last 12 months.
Right.
The product's got better, mm-hmm, the execution's got better. So we know each other.
Right.
And I think there is a common belief in the way that, you know, we both agree about where we see the market, mm-hmm, going and what's the best way to address that market.
Sure.
It is very early days.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going into too much granular detail at the moment. As you can imagine,
right,
there's still a lot to be sorted out.
The details are,
but
yeah,
we are delighted to be working with, mm-hmm, with MGM. There's a real energy. I mean, I see it here.
Sure,
and
right,
there's a real energy in the business and the JV and everybody looking forward, and it's not going to be easy. But you know, we think we've got a great partner. We think, mm-hmm, we're going to work really well together. And the interesting thing is that, you know, we're getting a lot, as you can imagine, a lot of incoming from analysts and from, mm-hmm, investors, and particularly from North America. And I think in the early days, it's been about who's going to be the winner.
Right.
And if you look at the UK market, for example, there's lots of different business models.
Yeah.
There are plenty of winners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are 4, 5, 6 companies making well over 100 million EBITDA from the UK industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've been saying to people, look, Paddy Power have got their strategy.
Right.
The Stars have got their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
William Hill have got their strategy. It doesn't, and we've got ours.
Right.
It doesn't mean to say that, oh, there's only one winner.
Sure, right.
All those strategies, mm-hmm, for the particular partners and the way they're going forward could do very well,
right,
assuming the environment in each state allows for that.
Right, sure, right.
But we think we've kept ours pretty simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. Two partners, JV, we know exactly where we want to go and what we want to do. And we provide all the tech,
mm-hmm,
and we haven't got to worry about 2-3 other partners,
right,
in the relationship, mm-hmm, and somebody doesn't want to do that because of that, and you know, so
I'm interested to see how this blends in with what MGM is doing in Nevada and now in Mississippi and New Jersey. You know, they've already had, you know, sports betting expertise on their staff. I know they in Nevada for the mobile app, they're using the IGT platform. I mean, are you going to go in there and change any of this, or how's this going
to
work?
Yeah, well, so I mean, we won't speak to existing contracts that,
right,
MGM got in place. It's not,
right,
my place to do that. But the announcement did say that the JV would basically take over all,
okay,
retail and,
mm-hmm,
and online. And we have a if you look at Stadium, for instance, mm-hmm, in Nevada, I mean, it's got 16 of the 20 B2B,
right,
customers in the strip. You,
sure,
know, it's,
right, right,
it's a very powerful,
mm-hmm,
for the US market,
right,
it's a good product. It's retail, it's,
mm-hmm,
mobile, it's online as,
right,
well. It's operational, it's functional, it's approved by the regulators.
Mm-hmm.
And what the intention will be is that the stadium is kind of the first sort of entry point, and over a period of time, then you evolve that. I mean, it's already being integrated into the GVC stack.
Yes.
The big question will be is that European sports books are a lot more sophisticated than your average US sports book. I mean, if you go in and you look at the baseball or the casino, it's win, lose, over, under.
Right, yes. Right, exactly.
Pretty straightforward. Now, the question is that if you went in day one with a European sports book where you had 300 different bets on the one.
It's very confusing.
On the one. It's going to be very confusing.
Because the players over there are in the rudimentary stage as well.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, you evolve it, and that's the beauty of what we've got. We've got something that works very well on day one. And, you know, we've tested that stadium technology significantly, and and the scalability of it is very impressive.
Right.
I mean, to double check the statistic, but in terms of processing bets per second, you know, we've tested it up to, if you took every single person on the open book open bet platform in the UK on Grand National Day, add all those together, the stadium technology can process more bets than that, which is huge.
Yeah, that is huge.
Yeah. So it's and our view was as well is that you actually look what customers want. First and foremost, they want a product that's stable.
Right.
If you try and go in with something that's too complex from day one, and you risk losing stability, you lose customers and you can't sign up the customers.
Right.
So stability
is important.
Is very important for us on day one.
And speed.
Absolutely.
I have all the apps in Nevada that I bet on when I'm there, and it's a little frustrating, you know, on some of the apps when you're doing in play betting, that, you know, you think you're getting the bet and then it's worrying, and then, you know, sorry, you didn't get that bet down, you know.
I mean, there's, ironically, price is often midway down what the customer's looking for.
Right, exactly.
Now,
right.
there are clearly price-driven customers.
Sure, right.
But for your average customer, price is somewhere at 5 or 6 position.
Right.
Because there's nothing more frustrating than not being able to get the app open, the app crashing on you.
Right.
The egg timer, it's not the egg timer anymore, is it? It's the whirly disc. It's like worlds and worlds and worlds and worlds and worlds. You've got next goal and it's, you know, it's, you missed it.
So that's basically what you want to bring to MGM and any states that you go into there in terms of stability and reliability.
Absolutely. Stability, reliability, absolutely important to the product.
Great. Also, I know an important part now is a CSR aspect of your business. You know, betting business is still a little, I don't want to say shady, but a little bit, you know, on the questionable side, so that you want to be above board at all points when it comes to, you know, being involved in the community, protecting your customers and those kind of things. What is GVC doing to elevate your level when it comes to that kind of CSR things?
Well, you're speaking to the right person,
because
post the merger, that is a responsibility of mine, is bringing all that CSR together. Because the one thing I noticed when we acquired Labrys Coral is quite often there are bits, you know, there's the left arm doesn't talk to the right arm, and, you know, there's really good stuff going on. And we've got the Labrys Coral Trust here, which has given millions to good causes, collected from the retail networks and the customers. But, you know, actually, with our interim results, we're likely to talk a lot about that CSR, because the acquisition of Labrys Coral has, you know, raised the profile of the business in the UK. It's a real opportunity to grasp the mettle as far as CSR is concerned. We all already do a lot, but there's so much more that we can do. And I think you're right, the industry doesn't get the greatest press sometimes.
No.
Some of it's warranted, some of it is not warranted, but there is a lot more that we can do.
Sure.
And I'm not going to give you anything now, unfortunately.
Sure.
The timing's not great.
Right.
But you will see over the coming months some very big commitments from us, both in terms of what we're going to do in the communities in which we operate, but also in terms of responsible gaming.
Right.
You know, there is a lot to be done. The beauty of online is, is that you know who your customers mm-hmm. are. You've got so much more information you have right. than in a right. retail point of sale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's using that data to make sure, because nobody wants to build a business on the back of problem gamblers.
Of course,
right. And, you know, if we can stop people before they get to that stage, then everybody's a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gaming should be about spending money to have entertainment.
Right.
And you enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. It should not be about losing the house and your family and everything like that. So when we've got the data, we will be announcing something in terms of what we're going to do with that data, how mm-hmm. we manage that data.
Sure.
But you're absolutely right. That is where the industry needs.
Mm-hmm.
And the integrity is clearly an important factor right. as well.
Sure.
And this is where, you know, you need to make sure that ecosystem is correct. The more people that bet through licensed, regulated operators, mm-hmm. the better you can protect both the individuals mm-hmm. and the integrity of the sports.
Right.
So the industry, in particular areas, you know, you can see betting patterns, particularly in some of the smaller events, when you right. think that raises a red flag, mm-hmm. and then you then talk to the bodies that are concerned, and you can raise this issue. If it's all going to illegal bookmakers mm-hmm. because the state has set this unrealistic tax, I mean, I'm not, you know, there are particular states with very high tax.
Sure, right.
So what you've said to your citizens and your states is, it's legal to bet on sports.
Yeah.
And the first thing that happens is that they go to the official site, which is rather restrictive, and the prices don't look very good, and
mm-hmm.
the product's not great because right. the operator's not going to invest a huge amount if his return is tiny.
Sure.
Yet he gets something in his mailbox from offshore
right.
sports book.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, these prices are much better.
Right.
They're offering me all these free bets
yep.
because they're not paying the tax. All of a sudden,
yep.
you know, you've created a much worse situation.
Sure.
So regulated sports, I think, is a great way of protecting the integrity of sports as well, protecting your customers,
mm-hmm.
and the industry has a responsibility. And what you will see, and I think you've seen in the UK, where people used to look at the UK market as probably the beacon in right. the industry,
mm-hmm.
the UK market is undoubtedly getting tougher in right. terms of the regulatory requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we recognise that, but we also recognise it's the industry's opportunity to lead rather than just to follow right. what people are asking for us. And that is where we are positioning ourselves.
Sure.
And that will be integral, particularly in the mm-hmm. US.
And I think the UK industry and a lot of industries, a lot of gaming industries in other jurisdictions around the world have been reactive rather than proactive.
Absolutely.
You know, when you look at the FOBT problems here in the UK, they ignored them for years and until they came to a head. Now the industry might pay a price for that.
Yeah, I think it's easy for us to sit here and say, you know, the retailers got it wrong, because we right. didn't own the retail right. at the time. But there is no doubt, you know, you talk to Kenny, our CEO,
mm-hmm.
and he's very much, no, this is about the industry leading. It's right. not about the industry reacting to right. what it's been told to mm-hmm. do. We've got a real opportunity now
mm-hmm.
to set our stall out, to give confidence that, you know, that we're protective of our customers. We can work with governments. We put money back into the community. It's a great place to work. So our staff, so everything CSR
mm-hmm.
is, you know, and is increasingly important to the industry, because the industry does do a lot of good, but people don't see that.
Of course, and I think there's, you know, ways to get that word out there that the industry hasn't done either. So, and that's true in every jurisdiction around the world, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm always amazed at how much money, you know, we are. You know, it's high millions.
Mm-hmm.
Lambert's Coral Trust
right.
has, and it's given, donated money to thousands of local
mm-hmm.
charities,
right.
You know, in around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a pro bono scheme here at GVC, whereby we encourage people to spend two days a year,
mm-hmm.
Fully paid,
right.
in the local community, either working sort of in shelters
mm-hmm.
or wherever, and, you know, and extending that to other offices.
Sure.
I mean, it's just about being better people in the community, being an industry that's seen as a giver,
right.
not just a taker.
Absolutely. That's a great thing. So you've given me some great information here about the company, about the market. Let's just talk about the future a little bit. You know, GVC has been a very aggressive buyer of companies. Do you see more consolidation happening within the industry here? And will GVC be a player in that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, we're still just digesting the last big one that we did. But gaming is global, and there is no doubt that at any point in time there is a market that's tough, because you can get, I mean, look what's just happened in Italy. They're just talking about a complete ban on marketing of gambling products. Now it depends on how long that lasts for, when the next government comes in Italy, but you have to be, you know, aware of those things. So to be in sort of multiple jurisdictions smooths out any of those bumps in the road. Also gives you great experience as well in terms of working in different markets. So interesting enough, just as we were completing the Ladbrokes deal, we bought the Georgian business.
Right.
Fully regulated market. It's quite a small market, but a really good management team, growing very rapidly. If we could see more of those transactions, we would do them. We're looking at new markets where regulation is just coming in.
Sure.
Central and South America look like some very interesting opportunities. Africa, again, is another opportunity. So I believe that it will be a continuation of M&A and also organic growth. Because ultimately, M&A should be about growing the top line.
Right.
We can strip costs out, but if all you're ever doing is stripping out costs, you still end up with a business ultimately that isn't growing.
Right.
We need to be growing, and we've done that with every acquisition. And growth gets you the multiple, and it also enables us to attract some of the best people in the industry.
Sure, yeah, no question. Yeah. When you have that expertise and you have those good people on staff and the partnerships you have, you can attract some of the good people, and they're harder to find these days than ever.
You're absolutely right, and it's interesting. I do think it's one of the things, it's the most underestimated element of our business is the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can talk about technology, people get, this technology is great, it's exciting. Yes, we've got some great brand names, but people talk, you know, sort of the analyst community talk less about the people, but the people are very important. You know, I mean, Kenny at the very top sets the culture of the business. It's a very entrepreneurial culture. We all work very hard, but we're all driven, and you know, keeping that entrepreneurial culture from when it was a 50 million market cap company to a 7 billion company is not easy, but we've still got it. And we've managed to attract some of the industry's best people. I mean, I you know, before I joined and I looked at the BWIN deal, I did say to Kenny, that's a lot of technology. You know, have you really got the scope? And he said, no, but he went out and he managed to attract who I think is the best technology person in the industry, Shai Segev, who would actually come from Ladbrokes Gala Coral.
Okay,
prior to that was at Playtech for 8 to 10 years as COO.
Yeah.
So managed to attract the best people into the industry.
Right, great. Well, thanks for the time, Nick. It's great to meet you, and hopefully we'll get to talk with some of your colleagues here at GVC as we go along.
Absolutely. Very nice to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliated marketing service for land-based and online casinos, and now sports betting in North America. To learn more about the service, visit iGamingPlayer.com/join. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can learn more about this and all subjects related to gaming by visiting GGBMagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, visit GGBNews.com. And follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. That's it for today. We'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast.